From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim, in for Michael Krasny. Coming up on Forum, as housing costs continue crippling Bay Area residents, many people are calling for more affordable housing. The challenge of providing subsidized income-restricted housing is a decades-long struggle that has only worsened because of less funding, higher construction costs, and greater need. In this hour forum, we look at how the affordable housing crisis reached this boiling point and what strategies can help. Join us. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim, in today for Michael Krasny. In an effort to get affordable housing built faster, San Francisco Mayor London Breed is working to get a measure on the November ballot that would allow buildings with large amounts of affordable housing to get through the city's legislative process faster. With housing affordability at crisis levels in the Bay Area, calls for more affordable housing are growing ever louder and more urgent, along with concerns of low-income residents getting pushed out of the region. We look at what it takes to build affordable housing and why it's been such a struggle. We're joined by Gloria Bruce. She's Executive Director of East Bay Housing Organizations. Good morning, Gloria Bruce.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Ben Metcalf is also with us. He's principal at Stronger Foundations and former director of the California Department of Housing and Community Development. Hello, Ben Metcalf.
Good morning.
And also with us is Amy Fishman. She's executive director of the Nonprofit Housing Association of Northern California. Hello, Amy Fishman.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. And I want to start with you. First, I want to define affordable housing because I think it has a lot of definitions, but I want sort of the technical definition of what typically counts as affordable housing.
It's a great question, and I think that it starts with how we understand how housing works and how real estate works and how taxation works in this country, because the market never builds to meet people, the greatest needs of people. The market builds, the logic of capitalism is around private property and profit making, and so when the market fails, we need market interventions, and we have that in every sector of our society where the market fails, and it fails often. That, you know, capitalism works really very well for the few and not so well for the many. And so we have a number of programs to intervene in the market so that you can subsidize housing from what the rents are or the home prices are to what people can actually pay. And as income inequality has grown vastly over time, to the tune of we're in the times of the robber barons of the 1890s or the roaring 20s, the vast difference between those with so much and the many with so few, there needs to be even more interventions in the market because the housing market is not working for most people. And so what we understand as affordable housing is interventions by the government so that you build housing and you subsidize it to the rents that people can afford. And one standard that you use is 30% of one's income for rent. Now, we know so many people are paying well above 30%, particularly in the Bay Area and across California. But that is a standard that has been used to say, are people rent burdened? Are people housing cost burdened? Yes.
But is it just government? I mean, so affordable housing is housing that receives some form of funding so that it will cost less to the resident. You said it's government entities, but these days it also feels like it's nonprofits and foundations that are providing the funding as well.
Oh, absolutely. So my organization and East Bay Housing Organization, so the Nonprofit Housing Association of Northern California, the core of our membership are nonprofit affordable housing developers that put together conventional financing, federal financing, state financing, and local financing, put it all together, philanthropic financing, to layer it in so that you can make affordable housing work and be sustained over time. And it's housing that is there to serve community needs, to be an anchor in community, to give people that hand up that they need to stabilize in their lives with rents they can afford.
And Gloria Bruce, it looks like you want to add something to what Amy Fishman was saying related to affordable housing.
Well, I think, you know, at the bottom of it, what we'd love to say is affordable housing is what people can afford. And I know that sounds sort of silly, but I think we want to get to the point where we don't have to have all of these interventions in the market to make it so that people can make ends meet and pay their rent or pay their mortgage. But Amy's absolutely right. That's where we are. So we've had to, in particular, because the federal government has really stepped back over decades from providing housing as a basic, just sort of a basic level housing for everyone, the way that I think most people around here accept that a basic education should be provided to every kid. We don't have that floor for people with housing, which is so fundamental. And so now we have had government coming in with programs, nonprofits who are very skilled coming in to own homes from a mission-driven perspective, and foundations and employers now getting into the mix as well.
So what proportion of the population then, do you know, receives subsidized income-restricted housing right now in the Bay Area? Amy Fishman?
Yeah, well, what we do know is that unlike many other programs out there that serve people that are vulnerable and have the most need, in California, only one in six Californians who are qualify for subsidy from the government get it. So it is so few, and it is a reflection of the what Gloria just said, the vast cutbacks of the federal government since the mid-'80s, since the Reagan era tax cuts and HUD cuts. When you have the federal government budget for the country that invests directly in housing for people that cannot afford the market get slashed and burned by 75% or 80%, that has an impact because then states and localities have to step in, but they don't have the resources and the mechanisms that the federal government does. So not enough people are provided with the subsidies that they deserve that would create a healthy, stable, and sustainable economy. Because right now we know what it looks like when people don't get the support that they need. Our society and our economy doesn't work. Our communities are really at risk with our education system, our healthcare system, our employment system, our transportation system. So it's an investment in our public infrastructure.
So Ben Metcalf, we're hearing that the pullback from the federal government is one of the reasons it's so hard to get affordable housing built in the Bay Area. Why else?
Well, I think that the other story here has been that California has in one way become a victim of both its economic productivity and a legacy of really constrained land use and building policies. So what has been happening at the same time as funding for affordable housing has been dropping is that the ability of market rate builders, so builders that don't require subsidy, to come in and build the kind of housing that they used to build so well in California, entry-level workforce housing, has just dried up. And so what we see getting built on the other end of the spectrum is a very, very small amount of very, very high-end housing that these builders can now pencil. And I think what that means is that for folks, a lot of folks who are sort of almost in the middle, we think of them as sort of essential workers, folks, the firefighters, the teachers, the service sector folks who used to not need affordable housing. They're now finding that what their incomes provide, for the amount that they can afford to pay on housing in the marketplace, they're now paying half their income on rent. And so that means that they now are increasingly in a position where they also need some assistance. So one answer to that, absolutely, is we need more governmental programs and interventions. The other answer is we need to figure out how to get more housing built. California today is building, estimates say, probably half to a third of the housing just to keep pace with a growing population. That's not tenable.
Mm-hmm. The other reasons that I hear that developers are not doing affordable housing, well, there are two reasons that I hear. One is because it costs so much to do it with regard to construction costs. And the other reason, Bette Metcalf, is just the regulations, that the regulatory process to get something approved and built. Is that true?
Yeah, that's right. And I think back to, Mayor Breed's announcement, why that's so exciting and promising is that I think it's trying to really solve for that issue by eliminating one of the big obstacles that developers point to when they're trying to find sites for housing, is that although they might find a piece of land that they think would work great and be very appropriate for a new community, it may be a multi-year process, and ultimately they may find that the local government doesn't move forward with an approval, even where the zoning might otherwise allow for it. We also have in California a very difficult and litigious environment where it's very easy, even if a local government does support a project, for a citizen to bring lawsuit and stop that project in its tracks, dragging particularly these larger projects, but really almost any project out in the Bay Area for what can go on for 1 to 2 to 3 to 5 years. We have some projects that are tracking 7 or 10 years in some of these larger locations, Concord, Treasure Island, and so on and so forth.
Well, State Senator Scott Wiener, you know, put out SB 50 in order to get higher density housing up zoning near transit areas. And it was a concern for residents in these areas, but it was also a concern for community groups, Gloria Bruce, ones who want housing built, affordable housing done. Can you talk about what some of those concerns were?
Sure. I mean, really, fundamentally, as Amy said, homes are what people need to live. They're their foundations, a foundation of our communities. So people feel understandably very strongly about that. And there's a lot of individual emotion that comes with your home, as there should be, which is really interesting for something that has been really shaped by all of these systems. And the truth of the matter is that right now, the market is not really working well for anybody. But that's been true for decades for Black folks, brown folks, people with disabilities, poor people. The market hasn't been working well for them really in this country ever very well. And so I think there are just concerns that, you know, as Ben said, we absolutely need to be building more and we need to be taking a hard look at cities that are not doing their share to build apartments and to welcome their growing populations. And at the same time, it's not just about building more. It's about where are we building and for whom. And so I think a lot of the groups in the state that were challenged by SB 50 were saying you have to very carefully take a different approach in some place like Oakland or San Francisco or even parts of Berkeley that have a lot of transit where people have been displaced historically over decades and decades and where the market doesn't really need a boost. We have a ton of market rate housing in Oakland right now. Oakland has actually exceeded its regional goals for building market rate housing, but we still have several thousand people living outside in tents. So the approach someplace in Oakland has to be different than the approach in someplace, you know, out in some of the suburbs. And I think that's what some people were saying.
Amy Fishman, what is the main source of funding for affordable housing? Like what is one of the biggest sources?
So the foundational layer of financing is almost always the federal, the National Low-Income Housing Tax Credit Program. And as I had mentioned earlier, when the Reagan-Bush administration basically slashed and burned the housing budget, they put in the tax code that you could get a tax credit, a tax shelter, if you invest in affordable housing.
Corporations, essentially.
Corporations could. And it was a privatization of the system of investment in affordable housing. And on one hand, it created a very onerous, complicated system that is not that efficient. On the other hand, it is a system that people have figured out how to make it work, and it is the largest producer of affordable housing in this country and in the state. It alone won't do it. You have to layer it on with additional state and local and conventional financing.
Yes, but essentially corporations buying tax credits to lower their tax bill, you're saying, is the biggest source.
It is the biggest source. And then here in California, we had a system called redevelopment. And that was eliminated by Jerry Brown in 2011, 2012, yes, in the kind of post-Great Recession time. And that took away $1 billion a year that was invested in affordable housing across the state. A quarter of that was here in the Bay Area. So all of these issues lined up in additional federal and federal cuts and state programs that had been exhausted left us with about 70% decrease in funding for affordable housing since 2008. So when you see all these pieces layered together, it's no accident why a crisis that has been brewing for decades, that has been hitting Black communities and Latino communities and Asian communities and poor communities the hardest, why we're seeing it in the extreme today. And so we also know the solutions. The solutions are that we have to build back our investments in these programs to make them work for communities. We need to also make the market work better and regulate the market, not to make it more difficult to build housing, but to achieve the kind of goals that Gloria was talking about.
Well, I want to let our listeners know that we're talking with Amy Fishman, Executive Director of Nonprofit Housing Association of Northern California, Gloria Bruce, Executive Director of East Bay Housing Organizations, and Ben Metcalf, Principal at Stronger Foundations and former Director of the California Department of Housing and Community Development. And Ben Metcalf, when we lower taxes on corporations, then is it less likely that the low-income tax credit is a stable source of funding for affordable housing?
Oh, good question. Yeah, when the Trump Tax Act went forward in 2017, it was hugely disruptive to the affordable housing space. You wouldn't have thought it would be, but it was. All of a sudden, corporations were realizing they didn't have the kind of tax losses anymore that they needed to offset by purchasing affordable housing tax credits. And the tax credit, the amount of money going into affordable housing dropped significantly as a result. We've also seen during the financial crisis, a lot of the big banks who were investors didn't have losses in the first place, so they stopped investing. So there is a fragility to the primary mechanism that we use to invest in affordable housing. But again, to Amy's point, it is the foundation, and it is working. And on the upside, I think it has really produced some real high-quality affordable housing, and having that layer of oversight by having a third-party corporation involved in the investment has really guaranteed that this housing is well-designed, well-maintained, built to last. And so we don't see some of the deterioration that we did, in the 50s and 60s of sort of public housing projects having to get torn down. These are a totally different kind of housing that really mixes in with the neighborhood and is in many ways simply invisible from what the market rate might otherwise be providing.
Well, Gloria Bruce, the California Housing Partnership estimates that the Bay Area would need more than 235,000 new affordable homes to meet the need of current low-income residents. I mean, do you agree that we need to be doing a lot of building?
I do actually agree with that. And I think that same statistic for my home county, Alameda County, is something like 43,000 homes short. So that's a lot that we need to do. The nuance that I would add to that, though, mm-hmm. again, like I said, it's not just about building, but where and for whom. And it's also about this approach that a lot of us in the housing field have taken, which I think is really powerful, saying to solve the housing crisis, we need a lot of solutions. And we need three P's. We need to produce housing. We need to preserve the housing that we already have that's affordable. And we need to protect people in their homes currently. We can't only build our way out of this crisis. We have to keep renters and homeowners who are, marginally housed or on the brink, we have to keep them in their homes. We don't want nobody in the affordable housing industry is saying, please, we want more wait lists. Like, they already get 10 times, 100 times more applications than they have for every new apartment building that they open. So let's keep people in their homes through strong tenant protections. Let's preserve and build up for environmental and seismic and affordability reasons. Let's repair the older homes that we have currently. And then, yes, let's look at where do we need to build more affordable, sustainable homes.
Do you agree with Amy Fishman that we also really need to look at our regulatory process? I mean, one of the things that Mayor Breed, for example, her ballot initiative that she's collecting signatures for right now is trying to make it so that, projects with a substantial amount of affordable housing could sidestep that legislative process. I mean, are there concerns for you in that?
We're very supportive of anything that helps affordable housing get through kind of bureaucratic red tape as quickly as possible. We do want to make sure that government is properly inspecting what's going on and stewarding those public resources. But yeah, we want homes to be able to get built faster. And at the same time, that's sort of once it gets into the city process. Before that, of course, we still want to make sure that impacted community members have a chance to have a voice on things so that they can express their opinions about what should happen, but not in a way that shuts down housing production for low-income people.
Well, we are talking about the decades-long challenge of providing affordable housing, what strategies might work, and we want to invite you, our listeners, to join the conversation. The number 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also post your comments on Facebook, Twitter, or email us at forum@kqed.org. And Gary writes, I would love to see cooperative housing built, something like a boarding house or dorm for single people or couples, or mixed co-ops for families and single people. This listener on Twitter writes, impact fees are a joke. They should be a freeze on building market rate towers and mandate developers to start building an affordable housing building before they build a luxury tower. Ben Metcalf, your reaction to that tweet from one of our listeners about impact fees and regulations that should be put on developers?
Well, I think from my perspective, the cost of building housing in in California, particularly in the Bay Area, has grown dramatically over the last decade. By some estimates, it can cost twice as much to build that same apartment that it did 20 years ago. And there's a bunch of reasons for that. Partly it's things like labor has gone up, materials have gone up, just the cost of building is harder to finance. But another big piece is that impact fees have skyrocketed. So these are the charges that cities impose on new housing to pay for other related public benefits, things like parks or improvements to transit or infrastructure. And I think one of the big critiques of impact fees has been that cities have often used these as a way to slow down new growth or to sort of ask the last people in to that city to cover the costs that really ought to be shouldered by the rest of the community. I mean, it's very simple math. I mean, if you put a very high tax on the creation of new housing, you're going to get less housing built, and then more people are going to be competing for the whatever housing is left, and rents go up, home prices go up, and the poor and working families are left behind. So no, I don't think raising fees is the answer. I think lowering fees actually would be more helpful for solving our housing crisis.
And in the first, go ahead, Ben Metcalf.
Yeah, so on the first one, on this issue of coming up with new and creative ways to solve the affordable housing crisis, I just have to say, you know, we did make a very significant accomplishment at the state level over the last couple of years to really liberalize the ability of homeowners to add a second unit, convert a garage, add a backyard cottage. It's very satisfying in part because single-family zoning has been historically used as a tool of exclusion for our communities of color, but also because the kind of housing that is created when people add second units is often naturally affordable. It's actually a very low-cost way to provide our singles and our working adults often a place to live that's a whole heck of a lot better than sleeping out of the back of their car.
Well, we've got another comment from a listener who writes, "It has been documented that we have not had wage inflation in decades. Would this be the other side of the coin? Wouldn't people afford housing if everyone made more money?" And it's an interesting point from Terry because, I mean, one of the things that we hear is just the need for affordable housing has grown so significantly that even if we implemented everything right now, it would be a while before we were actually able to meet demand. And there's this sense that we're chasing our tail. But, you know, give us a sense, Amy Fishman, of just on the ground, like what people are feeling. I mean, wage inflation is one thing that Terry is bringing up.
It is absolutely true that wages have stagnated and the housing costs have skyrocketed. It is also true that corporate profits are over the moon. They are, you know, whatever expression you want to say, that they are beyond imaginable right now. And the Trump tax cuts had an impact. We have to recognize that. When you increase wage inequality, when you increase the inequities of our tax system, people are hurting every day. And it's communities of color and low-income communities that get hurt first and foremost and the most and for the longest. And so we have to look at our system of how do we raise wages, how do we increase equity in this country, and taxation is one of the fundamental tools that we need. And we have an opportunity at the ballot in November to vote for Schools and Communities First, which is a split-roll Prop 13 reform measure, which says that corporations really do need to pay their fair share, that we need to fund all the services in our government, not just on the backs of people in their homes, but also the corporations need to do more.
Well, we'll have more with Amy Fishman, Ben Metcalf, and Gloria Bruce after the break. We're talking affordable housing. Stay with us. This is Forum. I'm Mina Kim. The struggle to build more affordable housing has only worsened with higher construction costs, less government funding, and more people in need. Yet with high housing costs continuing to cripple Bay Area residents, demand for affordable housing only grows. We're getting a breakdown of what affordable housing is and how we can produce more and pay for it with Ben Metcalf. He's principal at Stronger Foundations, former director of the California Department of Housing and Community Development, Amy Fishman, Executive Director of the Nonprofit Housing Association of Northern California, and Gloria Bruce, Executive Director of the East Bay Housing Organizations. And we're also joined by you, our listeners. Tell us, what are your questions? What have you always wanted to know about affordable housing or been confused or even frustrated about when it comes to affordable housing? Have you lived in subsidized or public housing or received other types of housing assistance? What was your experience like? What are ways that you think would help low-income people
most to be able to afford housing. The number 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also post your comments on Twitter at KQED Forum, on Facebook, or email us at forum@kqed.org. And Ben Metcalf, just before the break and just before I go to calls, I did want to get your reaction to Amy Fishman saying that, you know, the split role on Prop 13 would be one solution. Do you agree?
I do. I mean, I think that's a great way to get more revenue into cities' budgets. I think one of the great challenges of housing in California has been that cities have an economic disincentive to against housing. It's much more lucrative to have commercially zoned housing, and cities have contorted themselves to deal with that inability to raise revenues. And as I mentioned earlier in the show, one of the ways they've done that is by imposing very high impact fees or taxes on the construction of new housing, both affordable and market rate housing. And that has had a very dramatic effect in terms of slowing the creation of new housing at all product price points. One easy way to think about it is that over the last decade, about a third of California cities have actually added a modest amount of housing. It's about 5% is on average what they've added, of which the large majority is just new single-family homes. But two-thirds of California cities haven't added or have actually lost housing stock over the last decade. So we're really barely treading water in terms of adding housing. And at a moment when people are having kids and folks are trying to move in to get jobs, we're seeing the negative consequences of that. In fact, right now, today, there is a very large net domestic out-migration of folks born in California overwhelmingly are leaving. Some 130,000 Californians are leaving every year, and they are overwhelmingly low-income, overwhelmingly community of color. They've made the decision they can't make it work, and they're leaving, even at a time when California would seem to be, with a strong economy, a place that people ought to be thriving in. They're not making it work.
Well, let me go to calls now, and I'm going to start with Buck in San Francisco. Hi, Buck.
Hi. I appreciate the comments of my sisters, Amy and Gloria, but frankly, the whole conversation today is missing the most important point. Two-thirds of San Franciscans are tenants. There's only one way to impact the affordable housing crisis in San Francisco: strong rent control, vacancy control. We have to overturn the Costa-Hawkins Act and give localities the ability to have strong rent control. Another possibility would be a universal rent subsidy. In my neighborhood, Vernal Heights, we've developed 450 units of affordable housing. We're a neighborhood of 5,000 people. It's had no discernible impact on reducing housing costs in San Francisco. So I'd like people to address what I think is the only good solution, the only reasonable solution: stronger rent control.
All right, Amy Fishman, stronger rent control is what's needed?
Yeah, thank you so much, Buck, for your comments. What I would like to say is that we need bold solutions right now, and we need many solutions right now. We know what proven, tried and true, what we know can work, and that is rent control, that is building more affordable housing, that's preserving where people live. It's also having more housing in general. And so we need the three-piece solutions that Gloria was talking about before. We don't have one silver bullet. You know, I would love to say, oh, if we only just did this. But what I can say, if we come up with a whole bunch of solutions and it doesn't include tenant protections, then we will fail. If we come up with a whole bunch of solutions that doesn't include preservation of existing affordable housing, we will fail. And if we come up with a whole bunch of solutions that doesn't recognize that we need to build more affordable and more market rate housing, we will fail. There is an incredible housing shortage, and we have the data to prove it. And there is an increasing pressure on renters, and we have the data to prove it. So we know that we need an array of policy solutions. And last year, we passed a package of 3Ps legislation, and we can do that again this year. We know that we are building momentum for these bold strategies that cross sectors, where we can all come together and say, this is about our future together. We also need to have more communities that come together to say, yes, we are going to push back against all of those historic racist policies that kept people of color and low-income people out of communities, because I think Ben's comment is so telling that two-thirds of cities haven't added or have lost housing. That is very dramatic. We know that all communities need to do more, especially those communities that have historically kept people out.
Well, let me go next to David in Kensington. Hi, David.
Hi. First of all, thanks for this great program. I agree with almost every point that's been made, and I want to add a little information from the point of view of a builder, which is what I am, also the author of 5 books about construction and design and construction company management. I've tried to build affordable housing, and I've succeeded with my last effort. I built a house in San Pablo and sold it to a working-class Latino family, but I was able to accomplish the project financially only by subsidizing it heavily with my own labor. Here's what I want to state loud and clear. On that project, and it is typical of attempts to develop affordable housing, the cost of the government fees, never mind the sales taxes on materials, was equal to 50% of the cost of construction outside of my own labor. Half the cost of the government fees imposed on the project equaled one half of the cost of construction of the project outside of my own labor. And that is typical across the country. According to a study by the NAHB, it's a so-so study, but it's, I think, basically correct. A third or more of the cost of housing is the result of government-imposed fees. I wanted just to give a specific example, and I'll close with this nail in the coffin. This is typical. We buy lumber to build houses. Sales taxes in California are extremely high. The sales tax on lumber is extremely high. And in addition to the normal sales tax, there's an extra 1% of sales tax imposed only on lumber. We are sitting ducks in the building community for government fees and impositions and taxes, and always for good reason. But the net result is a tremendous financial disincentive. They're just outright obstacles.
Well, David, thanks. I want to get Ben Metcalf's reaction to what you're saying, because he has to leave us, actually, in the next couple of minutes. And Ben Metcalf, it sounds like he's underscoring some of the points you were making earlier.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think what cities, for all kinds of good reasons, are imposing very high tax burdens on the creation of new housing. And so that means that the sites that work for folks to build on are only the ones where they know they can get very high returns to pay back that investment. And the kind of product they're building tends to be sort of the highest income. So what just simply is not getting built anymore in California is that entry-level product. I mean, unless you're putting, again, unless, like the gentleman, you're putting in your own labor, maybe you can get there. But for most professional builders, they're not able to serve the needs of the community. You know, one of the most striking things for me is you might ask, okay, what state in the nation has the highest poverty rate today? I think very few people would realize that the answer to that once, and this is a census, you know, the census puts these reports out, once cost of living comes in, it's the state of California. The fact is that our poverty rate is double what it would otherwise be because of the cost of living, largely the cost of housing, and that's a function of scarcity. People are paying so much more for a very, very limited amount of housing. So again, we need to invest heavily in affordable housing. We know our most vulnerable folks will never be served by the market. We need to get folks off the streets and into housing that's subsidized and stabilized. But we also need to figure out a way to get the market to work for the great mass of sort of middle-income essential workers, because it's just not there yet.
So then before you go, Ben, your top three strategies for doing that? Both.
You know, Amy nailed it, right? There has to be a whole package of solutions. It has to start with, number one, significant more investment into affordable housing. Number two, getting much smarter on our land use and regulatory barriers. We need to make it easier, have sites that allow for more housing, provide more certainty in the system in the way that Mayor Breed is proposing. And then last of all, I think we do need to think about the cost issues, both the fee question, but also look at ways to bring more workers into the construction industry, look at more creative construction techniques to bring some efficiencies like manufactured and modular housing, like this really innovative space of backyard cottages. We need to find some new strategies. And I think if we can make progress on all those fronts, we can get California back to the way that it used to be in terms of building housing and really much more in line with what we see in our successful economic regions outside California that are able to keep building. This is not an impossible challenge. But it has been, it's been decades, in many ways, it's been decades in the making. And so I do think we all need to take a deep breath, work really hard on making change, but also understand that it will take us a years, if not a decade, to get ourselves out of the hole that we find ourselves in today.
Ben Metcalf, principal at Stronger Foundations and former director of California's Department of Housing and Community Development. Thanks for being with us this morning.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having this conversation.
Well, this person tweets, developers get tax breaks for building affordable units, but they're often not enough, and most of the units are being sold at market rates anyway. So where did the tax break go? Gloria Bruce?
Sure. Look, most people agree that denying people a safe, affordable place to live in order to maximize the profit of a corporation is unacceptable, which is why there was such a groundswell around the Moms for Housing campaign, right? Mm-hmm. And why there's this visceral sense right now. We heard it in one of the earlier tweets of, what's with all this market rate housing when people are living on the streets? But I think we have to look at a couple of things right now. I think we have to look at the fact that, as we've said repeatedly, we have a market that's very broken. And so one of the ways that we're dealing with that is to say, if you're getting some profit out of building, some of that profit should go back to help out working class folks and people who are not going to be able to afford that new luxury housing. And that's essentially what programs like the ones Amy's was talking about was doing. The organizations that her organization and my organization work with, they are mission-driven developers. The housing that they develop, generally speaking, is 100% affordable to people usually making no more than half or 60% of the area median income. It's affordable for a minimum of 55 years. So I think in the Bay Area, you're going to see some of the most sophisticated, most mission and heart-driven people who have created thousands and thousands of affordable homes. And it is still not nearly enough. But I really do want to say that this particular vehicle has worked. And, the other thing I want to say is that there's some comments about kind of, well, what do we do about market rate housing versus affordable housing? How do we house the missing middle? I think there are two main issues why this issue of market rate housing has become so controversial. One is that, as Ben and as the builder earlier mentioned, now you can't really just build unsubsidized housing that anyone who isn't rich can afford. In the past, you could. You could just build a home and a family of modest means could afford it. That is no longer the case. So we have to be looking at construction costs, and we have to be looking at creative solutions like public land as a way to help finance and build affordable housing. But the other issue that I think people are starting to have is that also in the past, a market rate builder might have been someone who lived down the street from you. And now we have corporations who are driving the investment, determining what the rates of return should be, buying up vacant homes. And so I think it's an issue not just of price, but also of ownership and control. And so I think that's why we're saying, let's have the solutions that are within the system that we need, while also acknowledging, yeah, we need to look at a different way of doing things through schools and communities first, through co-ops, and also by stabilizing tenants in the meantime.
Well, let me go to John in San Rafael. Hi, John.
Hi, good morning. I'd like to bring up a point that I don't think is being covered much, but first I just want to preface this by saying I was born in Berkeley. I'm left of Obama on most issues. And I'm also a former contractor. And one of the things I don't think is being brought up is the fact that cities have a certain, there's a term that's used in biology when biologists talk about carrying capacity of land. And when you get beyond a certain carrying capacity, the bushes become denuded and the trails start to erode. I'm using a wildlife analogy here, but there's certain cities. I travel to Asia quite a bit. There's certain cities like Tokyo that are around 12,000, 13,000 people per square mile. There's places in India and China where the numbers are up like 75,000 people per square mile. And the fact is that there's a certain comfort level for these cities around the Bay. There's certain populations that fit, and when things start to become beyond that, it makes life just much less pleasant. The whole quality of life goes down. And I'd like to give Berkeley as an example. I grew up there. I moved out in the 90s, but there's been a ton of building down around the bottom of the university. There's all these mega apartment buildings, and then all along Shattuck Avenue. And when I go over there now, it's on the weekend to have breakfast, there's a 2-hour wait at most restaurants.
Yeah, well, John, Thank you for bringing that up, that point. And we also have a listener on Twitter who writes, let's be honest, it all comes down to supply and demand. The only thing that's going to fix this problem is fewer people. I know that sounds harsh, but that's the reality. And I mean, Amy Fishman, I think what John is articulating is probably what you've heard a lot in communities where it's possible to build, but who want it the least because they're concerned about quality of life changes or density. So what's your response to John?
Yeah, thank you for bringing up those points. It's really important that we talk about our future and what is the society that we want to live in. I know I want my kids to go to school and have teachers that live in the community and don't get displaced out of state, like my daughter's kindergarten teacher, because they couldn't make ends meet here with housing costs. I know when I go to the local store and a local business that I want those workers to be able to live in the community, and I want to be able to support local businesses. I want to know that we have a healthy community and that no person should live on the street. It is unacceptable that people are outside in tents, in encampments, in garages, and in cars. That is not a quality of life for our entire community. So while we do want to grow in smart and sustainable ways that pay attention to the environment and all of our health, it is costly beyond belief to allow the housing crisis to continue as it exists. And I want to also make another point, which is that we need to take care of the humanitarian crisis today where people are on the streets. Then in there, it is a terrible quality of life for everyone, particularly those most impacted, as well as people who want to do something to help. The other issue is that there is even more people that are one paycheck away, one car breakdown away, one healthcare crisis away from being on the streets. So we also need to take bold and urgent measures to prevent people from becoming homeless. Those are the protections that we were talking about earlier. How do we keep people in their homes? So these are the solutions that we all need so that we all can have comfort and we all can have quality of life.
Well, Sashi writes in with an idea. Sashi writes, there are lots of luxury condos that stay empty. How about a rule that says if it's empty for a period of a year, then it becomes used as affordable housing? This will reduce rents and perhaps reduce construction in landlocked areas that are already overcrowded. Gloria Bruce?
Well, I think that comment comes from I might not exactly endorse that approach, but I endorse the spirit behind it, which goes back to what Amy was talking about, which is I believe we have enough. I believe we have enough in the Bay Area. Everybody loves the beauty, the water, the hills, the quality of life if you are fortunate enough to live someplace stable and have a good job that pays your rent or your mortgage. I believe we have enough of it for everybody. And do we have enough housing that people can afford right now? No, we don't. But I do think there is an appetite that you are hearing in that comment for different ways to think about, get out of the scarcity mentality. I've got mine. You don't get to have yours. Wait, we're going to run out of the good stuff. I really think we need to get past that. I think that's why people are looking at solutions like co-ops. I think Oakland passed a vacancy tax last year, which isn't exactly getting at what that person is, but it's basically the idea. I was hearing from a minister in Vancouver yesterday saying they're having the same issue with a lot of vacant luxury units, and they're starting to crack down on that, which with much harsher taxes on those vacant units. If you build a home, someone's got to live there. So I think we just have to start thinking differently. We have enough. We want everyone to have enough. Let's get there.
Well, Anthony writes, are there opportunities for voters to expand affordable housing at the ballot box in November? And of course, you brought up one of the ways that they can do that, Amy Fishman. But do you want to add to anything else that Anthony might like to know
absolutely
more about that's on this November?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you so much for the question. And what we have seen is that since 2015, voters have come to the polls in super majorities with 2/3 of voters saying, yes, we care about this issue and we want to do something about it and we want solutions. And in county after county and in city after city, we've seen that this is happening. We have a tremendous opportunity right now this year because the legislature passed last year a measure that allows our regional agencies, ABAG and MTC, to place a measure on the ballot to fund housing. And that regional ballot measure, we've tested and pulled it out in the community, and we see that 3/4 of voters believe that we need regional solutions, that these challenges don't stop at city and county lines. But like Gloria said, we're all in this together, that we have the resources that we need to address this crisis and solve it. So stay tuned for that. Everyone can get involved to talk to their local electeds, to community leaders, and say, yes, we want a regional housing funding measure on the ballot, and we want our regional agencies to put it there, and it's going to be an all-in campaign together.
You're listening to Forum. We're talking to Amy Fishman, Executive Director of Nonprofit Housing Association of Northern California, and Gloria Bruce, Executive Director of East Bay Housing Organizations. This is a fundraising period for KQED Public Radio. For more information about how to support KQED, go to kqed.org. I'm Mina Kim. And I will go now to more calls. Let's go to Greg in Palo Alto. Hi, Greg.
Hello. Well, my community is not doing much for affordable housing, I'll say that. Just a couple of maybe bizarre suggestions, and that is, it seems to me that, first of all, I think the state needs to get rid of people need to get rid of Costa-Hawkins and the Ellis Act. That's for starters. Secondly, it seems that there's two major problems. One is land, and the other is money to be able to build affordable housing. And so I'd suggest two things. The state retirement funds have hundreds of billions of dollars in them, okay? I can't see why that money couldn't be used in some way. It might be a little bit tricky. You might not be able to get around it, but that'd be a source of potential funding. And then secondly, I think that if you're going to build and you can't find land, cities, localities, counties may have to go to eminent domain to try and get property to be able to build affordable housing. And I think lastly, I think at this point, affordable housing is going to have to be rental housing. You're not going to be able to build affordable housing where you have single-family homes, especially in large cities. So I just throw those out as possibilities and see if there's any kind of response.
Well, Greg, thanks. And I mean, I think in some ways what Greg is reflecting is what feels like a much more collective conversation that this is a problem. Like, we are hearing more and more groups coming together to say, you know what, we need to deal with housing. We need to talk about housing and affordable housing. I mean, is that true? Are you seeing momentum that is fairly unprecedented, Gloria Bruce?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've worked at my organization for 9 years. I've been executive director for 5 years, taking over for the lovely Amy here. And it's just the way that this issue has gotten on the radar has been absolutely unprecedented, which does lead us to a lot of opportunity and also gives us the chance to say, hey, we've been telling you all this for literally 30, 40 years because people have been hurting for that long. It's great to hear an ally thinking creatively about affordable housing in Palo Alto, and I agree a lot with what the caller said. I don't know if I can go quite all the way to eminent domain because it doesn't have a great history in California, but that reminds me of the last thing I would say. I would add to what the caller mentioned, land absolutely is an issue. Lack of resources is an issue, but also undoing systemic discrimination and racism is a third part that we got to unravel.
And Gloria Bruce, could you also just speak to how fundamental housing is to every other aspect of your life? I think we're also just starting to get more data about how, you know, just the ripple effect of insecurity when it comes to housing, insecure housing.
Sure. I mean, I will share the story of one of the women in our organizing programs who used to live in housing managed by a slumlord. She's an elder, a wonderful, vibrant elder, but her apartment would get molds, and every winter she would be hospitalized with pneumonia. And then she tells the story that once she moved over, actually into, well, jointly managed nonprofit public housing, she stopped being hospitalized for pneumonia, and that's enabled her to get involved in her community, come to our programs, come speak out for more affordable housing. When we shift our energy to invest in housing policy to keep people in our homes, kids can do better in school, people will be healthier, our communities are healthier, period.
Well, Karen writes, what happened to Home SF program, transit villages, the San Bruno development? Do you want to give Karen an update, Amy Fishman?
Well, I think that those are great questions, and it requires people to come out in their communities when there are projects and developments before city councils and boards of supervisors to say, yes, we believe that we need more housing in our community, and we're going to speak up and talk about how we can make sure that we all gain benefits from this development. I think that's really the critical piece, is that we come together and see how all of our community is served when we work together around this. And just as an example, so we have a healthcare system, right? And it's spending lots of money in at times inefficient ways. If you live in a house with mold or you're living on the street, you're going to get sick or you're not going to get well. So we need to combine resources and say,
how can we use our healthcare dollars better by investing in affordable housing? How do we use our transportation dollars better by investing in affordable housing to get people out of traffic and off the roads? How are we investing in environmental sustainability dollars so that housing can be a solution for all of these issues? It is such a foundation. And I think that when we have projects in our communities, we have to see those linkages with all of what we can make work together.
What's your take, Gloria Bruce, on housing as a right? I think it's defined in a couple of different ways. Some would say that, you know what, we just shouldn't be profiting off housing at all, right? Where others would basically say that we need to make it possible for everybody to be able to afford some form of housing, even if it's market rate. So where do you fall on that?
Well, because I'm on the radio, I forgot to wear my housing as a human right shirt, but I have a couple of those in my dresser at home. And yeah, I do think it needs to be established as it is the most fundamental human need. Do I think that currently we're in a capitalist society where housing is treated as a profit-making enterprise? I do. So I think that right now—
And a lot of people's, you know, it's their major asset.
And I don't villainize people who are builders or who are developers, but there's got to be an extent. There has to be moderation, right? There's nothing wrong with renting out a home and making enough to live off of and pay your own mortgage. There is something wrong with spiking the rent and throwing a family out just so you can have someone else move in who you think can pay you a little bit more. So I do think housing should be a human right, and I think we need to look at how do we challenge the system that we have right now.
Final thought, Amy Fishman, in the last 20 seconds.
Yes, please stay tuned for Bay Area Housing for All, a ballot measure coming to you throughout the entire 9-county Bay Area so that we all can invest in our solution together. No matter your race, no matter your income, we all need a great quality community and home to live in.
Amy Fishman, Nonprofit Housing Association of Northern California. Gloria Bruce, Executive Director of East Bay Housing Organizations. Thanks to both of you for being with us this morning. And Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Tina Lauerberg, Ariana Prale, Blanca Torres, and Susan Britton. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. And our interns are Michael King and Jameson Weiss. I'm Mina Kim. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.